And good morning. How is everyone today? It's a new show of Homegrown. How about that? Good morning, Clinton.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
You know, I am absolutely awesome this morning because one of our guests brought me coffee.
Really?
He brought it for it. That is so awesome. It's so nice to have someone who knows you, who gets you. I'm so full of love right now. I may even hug you today. That's the good mood I'm in.
That's some pretty spectacular coffee.
Hey, coffee is magic. It's magic in a cup.
All right. Well, great. Great. Well, we should start the show before the hugging begins with our parental advisory. At some point in this show, we may say the word Machiavellian. Machiavellian. It could. We will try not to. We will try our darndest. But if you have sensitive ears, if you have young ones, if you have small people who are still running around asking you questions about the latest Star Wars movie, and you don't want them to grow up too soon, you might want to usher them out of the room before they hear the word Machiavellian.
I actually like that word. That's a good word this week. I like it. Thank you.
It's just okay.
Normally I complain about you. See what the magic of coffee does to me? All of a sudden, I'm just down with anything. I'm rolling with it.
I'm thrown. I'm so thrown. I am so thrown. Let's go to our first guest. We are pleased to have with us from our Art in Place, the director, Elizabeth Breeden.
Elizabeth Breeden herself, yes. The gradually leaving Art in Place, director of Art in Place.
Oh, did we just break news on Homegrown?
I know, I saved it for you. Score!
Dun, dun, dun!
Dun, dun, dun!
That's a scoop. You heard it here first. So what's up with that?
Well, you know, Art in Place has been here for 16 years, and it was time for old farts like myself to hand it over to some place that would have new ideas, give it a little sparkle. So we turned to Piedmont Council of the Arts, and we said, would you like to, as the Arts Council, be in charge of Art in Place? And they said yes. So actually, they have the current contract. They're the woman. They're the man. They're the people.
So for those people who don't know the ins and outs and the details, what exactly is Art in Place?
Have you been asleep for the last 16 years,
I'm
man?
I
swear to death.
I'm just trying to lay the groundwork. Put the foundation down.
Right. Let's put the foundation. If you drive around Charlottesville, Virginia, have you been to Charlottesville, Virginia? Let's just start with the basics.
Every once in a while, I hear it's a nice place.
And the thing that sparkles people's imagination is they drive around town and they see these weird-ass sculptures. Ooh, was that a bad word? Sculptures on the streets of Charlottesville, and they say, why the heck did they put that sculpture there? And it was me. It was members of my board. We put out a call to artists. They lend us a sculpture for a year. We put it on the street, and then we take it down again. So if you really hate it, we take it away a year later.
Really? Really? Can I say how jazzed I am about this whole thing? Because I have been in other incarnations of my life. I've been to other cities. And I've been to cities in Europe, and I remember visiting Brussels.
Yes, Brussels, Scotland.
And one of the cool things for me about Brussels was we were driving around, and it's this old European city with old Europeans, and I guess young Europeans, but they're all old because it's all Europe, you know.
Thousands and thousands of years. Hundreds and hundreds.
I think maybe you need some coffee this morning. Really?
I so do not need coffee. And so one of the cool things was we're driving around and there are all of these statues. I mean, there's all this sculpture.
Yes.
Just everywhere in the middle, in the divisions in the middle of the road. And, you know, it's sort of neoclassical.
Right.
Right. So when all of a sudden I was driving around Charlottesville years ago And suddenly there's a piece of art.
Piece of art in the middle. The best one was there was a folk artist that put some lions that were looked like cardboard cutouts and they were steel. And someone wrote us to say they thought that the lions were way too realistic. They thought they were being attacked in the night. Whoa! Is that great? Yes. And I mean, That's awesome, yes. And then we've also had a guy I think it was a guy who was putting up fake ones. They were little bricks, which I thought was really cool, but other people were not so enamored with it.
He was putting up fake bricks? What?
He was putting up little sculptures that were these bricks painted white that looked like little snowmen, and he was calling them an art in place sculpture.
Oh.
Because he was, you know, and I mean, imitation is the biggest form of flattery. It was good. Bootleg art in place, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Only in Seaville, my friends. Only in Seaville.
You got it.
That's nice. So how much pushback do you get from pieces? How much feedback do you get from pieces? Because I was surprised. Like I said, I really grooved on it. And it was because it was one familiar to me because I'd seen it in other cities, but also really new because, you know, in Brussels, like I said, it's mostly neoclassical. It's all these things that look like the type of, you know, human, you know, realistic type of sculptures.
So because of the way that our format, we put an invitation out to artists to submit a sculpture that would go up. They can do a proposal so that our jurying process is in July and you don't put them up until October. So you could propose something. But because we only give a $1,500 stipend, which is basically a delivery fee, get it on your truck and deliver it to us. We end up getting large steel sculpture. But you have to realize that we're a 35-mile-an-hour gallery. And at 35 miles an hour, you've got to get it as you go by. And in fact, Bill Bennett at the university was on our jury, and he does the whole jury process. He stands up to leave, literally in the doorway, turns around in the doorway and says, you know, I thought this was the stupidest idea I had ever seen. Art from a car. Are you kidding me? It just puts the whole deal about art down. And then when I lived with it, I thought, oh, how American. You don't get out of your car, you still get your, you know, art, and there you are. And so a lot of the decisions we have to make are about, would you get it, even if you saw it day after day? The other thing is that on our third appeal to city council, we had to say, you have to realize we've had more than one person respond that they had to change their kid's car seat from one side to the other so they could see the art both going to town and coming home again, and that all of your constituents speak or vote, so that you need to consider that.
Yeah.
Probably the, you know, some of the height, there's a number of people who've told me they, like you, Clinton, drove into town. I think it's the lady who's gone from Monticello came to apply to be the director of Monticello. And when she saw the art in the middle of the town, she said, oh, yeah, this is my town. So we do have that kind of feedback. At the same time, the first 4 years, people hated us, roundly
really?
Hated us.
Yeah,
because it's bad art, man. I've been to the Louvre. I know what good art is.
I was surprised to run into so many people who were dissing it. And
yeah.
who were and,
right.
and it, surprised, but also kind of pleased because they were dissing it based
on
those.
They were loving to diss it.
Absolutely. They were based on those things like, I don't like that, or that's really crap.
Right.
And like, and in a way, I mean, on one hand, I was thinking, why are you guys complaining? It's art just right there in front of you. I mean, you didn't have to pay for it or anything like that. It's
right.
just right there. And on the other hand, I was thinking, how great. These people are actually talking about art.
Right, exactly. And that's it. And that's it exactly. To hate it is as much as to love it, because at least you go to the I hate it because, or it's not moving me at all, or it's butt ugly. All of that is part of an art discussion. So that's fine. You know, that's all part of what you want to happen. But as I say, it's by the side of the road. It is not exactly. We're not making a statement about where we live, which is kind of sad, too. A lot of art is about public art is about placemaking. It's about Charlottesville and the important things that have happened here. Uh-huh. So one of the other projects that I'm doing is in front of Jefferson School. We have, through a long 5-year process, commissioned a work by Melvin Edwards, who is one of the premier sculptors in America, to commemorate Vinegar Hill, to honor Vinegar Hill,
lost
neighborhood. Well, now we're on a different plane. We're not putting up something that you drive by. We're putting up something that is talking about Lewis and Clark and talking about Jackson and Lee, the other sculptures that were put up 50 years after an event to say what happened there and what was significant. What's different here is that the public called for this sculpture. Mr. McIntyre didn't decide that he was a rich guy and he just put up the sculpture he thought was appropriate. So we're in a new world when you commission a work that is about a significant event in your town and you want to be thoughtful and discuss it. And you want it to stay as a significant event for time immemorial, when it is a stainless steel sculpture. So see, you're looking at permanence, and you're looking at, let's talk about an issue that will repeat itself over and over. If you don't engage poor people in their own discussions about their own neighborhoods and about the value of land, you will not have a town that's what you want.
Yeah, you know, that is fascinating. I hadn't thought about that or hadn't recognized it until just this moment when you were talking about it, because of course the idea of public sculpture in towns is nothing new, right? We've got it in Lee Park, we got it in Jackson Park, and I hadn't thought about how much of that really, how powerfully that speaks to the identity of a town,
right?
And how powerfully towns express themselves through the public works of sculpture that they choose and that they put up, and you're right, it's an expression that stays. That stays and stays and stays and stays and stays for, you know, generations.
Right.
But I also think that's something that Charlottesville in particular is really good at. It's Charlottesville as a community is really good at finding a niche that's all about Charlottesville and putting it out for everybody to see. So I think it's also going in the vein of how this town works, as well as,
right,
you know, as well as recognizing something that needs to be recognized.
Yeah, but now that sculpture's interesting in that when you say you want to do a monument to Vinegar Hill, in the black community, people will have asked for it. And in the white community, you get this little pushback that says, why do we want to bring up bad things?
Yeah.
But the you know, the deal here is that
Can I just answer that question for anybody who's wondering what the answer to that question is? Let me just tell you. Because bad things happen. And if you don't talk about them, they happen again. That's why.
Yeah. And that conversation is a local, you can use local context to discuss the national issues we have about urban redevelopment, about how you engage disenfranchised people back into the conversation about places where they have power, if they are engaged in believing that if they voice their concern, it will be listened to. You know, it just gets into that much more complex, larger conversation that you do want to stand in front of the sculpture and go, well, why is that there? Oh, my God, you're kidding. They leveled this place down to dirt as a response to, oh, I know how we'll get through mixed housing, which is a mixture of poor houses and middle-class houses and commerce, most importantly.
Right, right.
You know, let's just put it down to dirt and we'll start over. Really? You really thought that was a solution? So, you know, then we're in the current. Then we're current. Then we're talking about Friendship Court. We're talking about West Haven. We're talking about what's mixed housing. Does mixed housing work? What happened with federally subsidized housing? Did it work? Why didn't it work? What's a pocket of poverty? Okay, I've gone on. You all go ahead.
No, that's awesome. And the fact that a piece of art is going to start and continue that conversation is amazing. That's awesome. I mean, that's really what I think art should do.
Well, Leon Jackson. Look at Leon Jackson. Do we pull him down? Do we regard them as art? Do we say that that was history and that Mr. McIntyre was looking at, well, let's honor the obvious heroes of this local community when everybody else is going, oh my gosh, I don't think you pull them down. I think you put up something that is a response.
That is a response to it. Right. And I know that a lot of other, especially southern historical towns, have started taking down statues of those kind of icons. As a result of conversations that went on in their community about, well, you know, should we really be proud of that?
But I want us to continue the conversation about if that was up there and it was put up. I'm scared to death that we will ignore the people keep going back to the Holocaust and trying to relook at it and do a movie about it and keep it. Let's keep going back to slavery and saying, how did we let our minds get in such a place that we went, oh, well, let's just keep this going because economically it works.
Because
we're doing it today. Let's not fool ourselves. You know, the beans are still being picked.
Yes.
People are still being brought to for what constitutes slave labor.
Yes.
And the clothes we enjoy. So you can't let the conversation go. You got to keep on bringing back what were we doing and what happened and where are we going with this.
And I think the pushback is always, oh, well, I'm uncomfortable having this conversation, so let's not have it. But I think we still need to push that, because once we start having the conversation on the regular, then the uncomfortableness goes away.
Right.
You get used to having those conversations, and you realize it's not, we're not pointing at anyone to say, well, this is your fault and you need to fix it. It's a conversation saying, this is the problem. Let's talk about how to fix it. Let's come together.
And let's hear your perspective, because you're coming at it from a perspective that I never even imagined.
Right.
Oh.
And that's how problems get solved.
Yeah.
Everybody who has a stake in it gets in a room and has a conversation and figures out the best way to do it. That's how it happens.
Right. Okay, Clinton, Sparkus, baby, come on, you can do it.
I'm gonna hit our new fancy thing. Hold on.
Oh, Clinton. Oh, I'm sorry. How fancy was it?
It's playing now. It didn't. What? It didn't play.
Oh, it's playing now. Yeah.
That's depressing.
I see. There's monitor over there that has voices.
Oh, well.
All right, well, let's do that. We'll just have to do this the old-fashioned way. It's 17 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And if you're just tuning in, then that's a shame, because you've missed a great conversation so far. We're sitting here with Elizabeth Breeden, the director of Art in Place, and we're talking about Art in Place, the organization, and Art in Place, the concept. Really, really fantastic. Stay tuned, of course, after Homegrown. It's the Sunday morning wake-up call, and this time it's Madman Sean McCoy. Cord with his guest, Mike Singer. I think he's somebody important. He might be.
He might be. That name sounds familiar.
Did he get to be somebody? I think.
Oh, wait. Is he the mayor?
I think he might be.
Oh, my God.
I think he might be. You'll have to tune in to the Sunday morning wake-up call to find out for sure. And, of course, at 4 o'clock later on, it's Club de Sabor con DJ Nitro El Mercenario, Charlottesville's only locally produced Spanish-language show featuring the sounds of America Latina. Hey, Leslie.
I just have some breaking news of my own. It's...
Did you break something?
No. It's snowing. Did you see that?
Everybody look outside.
Everybody look outside right now. It's snowing.
Put your face up. Let it fall on your face.
You know, we told them we weren't going to do the weather update during the show. But you just couldn't resist.
I couldn't resist.
They opened the window. They let them see. Too bad.
It's so pretty.
It's so pretty.
So Elizabeth, how is Art in Place going to change with the Piedmont Council for the Art running? I mean,
Sweet Pea, isn't that an interesting question? They need a year to run it to see what it is, and then I think you will see. You know, you could have themes, or you could have So but I don't know how many artists can follow a theme. The thing that gets you, when you look at this program and go back to the conversation we were having about monumental sculpture and placemaking, and come back and say, this is happening, this program has been copied in more than 17 cities, and I actually copied Rhode Island, which is no longer working. So when you look at it, it's sculpture about me.
Take that, Rhode Island.
Take that, Rhode Island. Providence, Rhode Island. We
Providence,
are still in existence.
We took it. And we kept it
died.
Going.
I think the guy died. So, yeah, that's part of the point about why I'm exiting is, you know, you want to leave while you're on a high. But the sculpture is about me, not about me, about the individual. And so it is not about the place so much. Most of the men and women who are doing these sculptures are out there making the sculptures, whether you buy them or not. That's what they do. And I was married to one of those, so I get that. But it is very, you know, the me generation, the whatever we're in right now, it's very descriptive of what we are now. I think we will start to see sculptures about environmental issues or sculptures about green, blue. So that could be, you could start to do themes that way. It takes a lot more organizing, and so God bless them. They should do something that's more relevant to our time, and that's what you need to let go of a project so it can grow and live, and that's what I'm doing.
Okay, so I have one final question for you. Get ready.
I'm ready. I'm holding on to the chair.
Hold on. What was your favorite art and place sculpture?
Great question.
Well, the big ugly fish, and you know that's
I love
a loaded
how she calls
answer.
It the big ugly fish,
and
it
that
just
was
because
the kids were. That's what the ones the kids all responded to, and of course my son did it. So, duh.
There you go.
There you go.
I think my favorite was the polar bear.
You know, the polar bear stayed. That guy gave it to us. And there's a lady that dresses the polar bear. And she came up to me once at a lunch and said, I'm the lady who dresses the polar bear.
So it's one person who does that.
It's one. Rumor has it. And she keeps it clean. And she always takes her dress away that she's dressed the polar bear in. Yeah.
I love the polar bear. I have a thing for bears.
Yeah.
But
it's a pretty sweet sculpture. How about the butterfly? Which is also now permanent too, not so much.
But, yeah, I love how there was somebody. I didn't realize there was only one person, but I loved how somebody had started to dress the polar bear. And what an interesting! Have you talked to the person who made the polar bear? Was there a response?
Oh yeah, he
does.
No, he's an old geezer like the rest of us, so he doesn't care. No, the thing about it is that the polar bear was being dressed, and everybody was like, "Oh, that's so cool." Down the street for a year was the Earth Mama, who was a woman sitting
down
straight with her head.
Right.
Somebody was putting a ball on her forehead, and everyone was offended. We had kids would go by and take the ball off, and after a while I started sticking the balls under the sculpture to see how many, because you started with golf balls and then went to baseballs and back to golf balls, so I could shove them under the pedestal. And the thing was that Earth Mother wasn't about balancing a ball on her head. I mean, you know, so it's like, it's funny how everybody wants you to be engaged with sculpture as long as you're kind of loving it, not dissing it, is the only way I can describe baseballs on Earth Mother.
Well, we don't know who put the ball there, so we don't know if he was dissing it.
We don't know.
That may have been his funny acceptance
of it. Well, now, we had a clay sculpture that we're almost sure a little kid tried to, because it got broken in ways a little kid would climb. And that was sort of, the artist was freaked out, but I sort of was like, I think this isn't vandalism, I think this is love. Which to me was this profound image of, oh, you can overlove somebody and it can hurt them.
And so this may be a little postmodernist heady, but I wonder if when somebody does something like that with the sculpture, is it like sampling in the music business? I mean, does it remain the same sculpture?
She repaired it and sold it, so she was okay. But no, okay, I'm going to try to tell this story fast. In the first 4 years, we had a midnight Christmas night vandal. Midnight for 4 years on Christmas. And it was my theory that it was an artist whose mother, he only saw her once a year, she was an artist, and at the end of drinking with her all day, he had to go kill a sculpture. And he would go out into the highways of Charlottesville, and he would break one because he stopped after 4 years. And I take it as a man because of the way that it was shoved down. But at that time, I would present before little kids in schools about art in place, and I would do the whole perils of drink conversation. And you could see the teacher in the back of the room going, "You're not going to perils of drink, are you?" And I'd say, "Oh, yeah, because we all need to know when you drink too much, you do stupid things." And that's where I would go with my little kids lecture about. And after 4 years, he stopped. So I don't know what happened, but it was kind of interesting that I had a consistent, and I got it down to midnight on Christmas night, because that by then I had people driving around town that would go, he struck, and it was like 11 o'clock, and then it was midnight, and it was 4 minutes after midnight, and it was midnight on the nose almost every year. So that's my theory about the perils of drink.
Maybe it's the lions that chased him away.
The lion. He got scared by the lions, and that was it.
Elizabeth Breeden, thank you so very, very much. And thank you for 16 years of art in place. All right. Hey, Leslie, I think we should tell people what's coming up in this wonderful town of ours.
Okay, but I have another surprise for you.
What is this other surprise for me?
Hello, this is Brian Weimer of the Ix Art Park, and you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC.
That was certainly a surprise.
Isn't that awesome?
That's great. I'm loving this. We are slowly but surely creeping into radio respectability. Will we even survive?
I don't ever want to be respectable. Ever. I want to stay avant-garde and crazy and on the edge and in your face.
You know, I don't think we'll ever really reach avant-garde and on the edge, but I don't think that either of us has to worry about respectability anytime soon.
And... Oh, okay. You're gonna do the thing, aren't you?
I'm gonna do the thing. Let's hit those tins. Let me tell you a little bit about what art is going on and coming up right now in this wonderful town and area of ours. Currently running from now till April 3rd to the American Shakespeare Center. It's their Actors Renaissance season. The shows that they're doing is Shakespeare's The Tempest and Measure for Measure. They're also doing Middleton's Women Beware Women, Fletcher and Massinger's The Sea Voyage, and William Congreve's Love for Love. Go over and check those out in Stanton. Today is a musical audition workshop by Live Arts from 1 to 5 p.m. That's today, at the Music Resource Center. And I think it's focused on brushing up your audition skills for their upcoming musical, Dreamgirls. So if you're thinking about auditioning in general, if you're thinking specific about auditioning for Dreamgirls...
Will you dream girls?
Oh, don't even go there. Then consider the musical audition workshop by Live Arts at the Music Resource Center today, 1 to 5 p.m. January 20th. Ubu Faust, a puppet play, which is a mix of Ubu the King, Faust, and Punch and Judy, done by Jigsaw Jones at Live Arts. Check it out. January 21st, the soundtrack for a revolution, African-American music and the protest tradition at the Jefferson School American Heritage Center. It is a lecture, but at the same time is a lecture about various songs. So it's a lecture about art. It's artistic in a way. January 22nd, let's get back to some serious hardcore art. It's Bent Theater at the Bridge PAI, our favorite Charlottesville improv group.
Yes!
Go get Bent. January 22nd. Two exhibits opening at the Fralin Art Museum at the University of Virginia. One is Richard Serra, Prints, Navajo Weaving, Geometry of the Warp and Weft. And the second one, Two Extraordinary Women, The Lives and Art of Maria Causeway and Mary Darby Robinson. Both of them at the Fralin Art Museum. Go check them out. Also on January 22nd, starting on January 22nd and going to the 31st, Pride and Prejudice at Guerrilla Theater down on Allied Street. January 23rd, 24/7 by the whole theater. We might be talking about that a little bit later.
I think we might be.
Think so. January 24th and 25th. It's those auditions for Dreamgirls that I told you about at Live Arts. And to just look at a little bit of the music that you can touch on in our town. January 21st, it's Annabeth McNamara and Matthew McAllister at the Blue Moon Diner. Also, Reggae Residency and the Positive Collective in the Ante Room. January 22nd, Super Vixen at World of Beer. Same night is Equally Opposite and Wills and Alex Double doing their mixtape release concert at the Ante Room. January 23rd, Scott Link, Rusty Spiedel, and our man Michael Clem at the Batesville Market.
Yay, Michael, we love you.
You were just jumping in today. What is up?
Somebody brought me coffee.
January 23rd, it's the Robert Jospe Express Trio at McGrady's Irish Pub. And coming up January 29th, Morena Lasco and J Pun Quartet featuring Peter Spar on bass and Devon Harris on drums at the Jefferson School Heritage Center. Of course, every Monday, it's the Singer-Songwriter Night at the local. Every Wednesday, Jim Wave at the Blue Moon Diner. Also, the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Thursday, it's the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And every Thursday at Miller's, it's the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just gotta come down to Dearth. And if you are an artist and have an event, contact us. Let us know about it. We'll tell people about it. www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or you can email us at homegrown947@gmail.com.
Why, thank you, Clinton. That was a wonderful list of what's going on artistically in our little town.
All I do is list it. It's the town that makes the art.
Oh, boom. There you go.
Where's our mic drop sound?
I know. We need a mic drop sound so badly. Okay, so our next guest never has to worry about respectability, because he never had it. It's our lovely friend, Ray Netzel from Hole Theater, here to talk about 24/7.
Well, thank you, Leslie and Clinton. And that was a wonderful list, although I do believe that 24/7 was not on the list, and it's this weekend, January 23rd, at Live Arts. Two shows, one at 7.
We mentioned it.
We got it.
Oh, I don't. I wasn't listening to what you said. I'm sorry. I don't.
It's okay. Ray brought me coffee this morning. We're gonna let that one go.
I'm the one who brought you coffee.
Yes,
I'm the one who brings you things.
So, okay, how many years have you been doing 24/7?
Well, first, they should tell them what 24/7 is.
Yeah.
They don't know? Who doesn't know what 24/7 is?
24/7 is, for those of you who don't know, 24/7 is a name that we give to a production that we do once a year. We've done it for 8 years, to answer your question, in also your question, Clinton.
Awesome.
So what we do is create 7 new plays in 24 hours. The plays are about 10 minutes long. They're written overnight. They are rehearsed all day, and they're performed 24 hours after the inspiration, the kickoff, the send-off for the playwrights to go write the plays. And the other thing that's kind of interesting and I think very cool about 24/7 is that everything's random, and that is that the playwrights don't know what they're going to be asked to write other than a theme. And then when the plays are written, the directors come in. There's 7 directors. They don't know what play they're going to direct. They just pull it out of a hat. And then when it's time to cast the play, the actors' names are just pulled out of a hat. So there's just a lot of randomness.
There's no box.
There's no box. Yeah, there's a box.
Yeah. So there's no thinking.
There's no thinking.
There's no thinking.
There's inside the box.
The box is not pre-assembled.
Right. It's from IKEA. No.
All assembly required.
So I've done 24/7 twice, and
yes,
I loved it both times.
Does that make it 48/14?
Oh, 48/14. Me and my friends in Seattle do this. Not that I'm good friends with all of them, but some of my friends in Seattle do something, and they do it back-to-back, and they call it 48/14. No, they call it 14/48. Anyway. It's
whatever
twice
they call
as much.
It.
Okay. It's not necessarily twice as good.
But it's a really interesting experience, especially for... I've acted twice.
Yes.
So it's a really interesting experience, especially for an actor, because you just kind of show up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday and somebody calls your name, and then it's 90 miles an hour for the next day.
Yeah, that's, and also you were, we've had a few people who've written a musical overnight.
Yes, and I was in one of those.
You were cast in one of the musicals.
Which is crazy. Right. How do you write a musical overnight? But, oh my God, it was great.
But if you're Edward Warwick White, you can write a musical overnight.
Exactly, and it was awesome.
It was awesome. And that was one of the, there's so many perfect plays that just happen. They're written, they're really well written, and then they're cast in maybe a non-traditional way, a way that you wouldn't necessarily cast it, you know. And like Dale, who's primarily a lighting designer, played one of the beauty pageants and sang this great song.
Yes.
And you would probably say that she would not audition for a musical.
But she rocked it.
But she rocked it. She totally rocked it. And that's what I love about 24/7, when it all comes together. Even though it's random, it all kind of comes together as this little moment of wonderful theater.
Yeah, there really is like a magic to it, because seriously, when you show up on Saturday morning, you're like, how in the world is this going to work? Like, there is no way this is going to work. But by 7 o'clock that night, it's all come together, like, and all the technical aspects, everything just kind of falls into place, and it's really awesome to be a part of it. And and I have had friends come to see it and say the exact same thing, that the one thing that they say is, oh my God, somebody wrote that last night? Like, they learned it today? That's crazy.
Right. And how was that possibly random? Now, Clinton is what we call in 24/7 speak a triple threat.
Yes, he is.
You're a triple threat, right? You've directed?
Yes, I have. You've never asked me to direct for 24/7, Ray. You've also never asked me to write for 24/7. But you brought me coffee this morning. You brought me coffee this morning, so I'm gonna let that go.
Okay, that's the coffee. Triple threat. So yeah, Clinton is one of the I don't know, what's the word? Stalwart, the heroes, the whatever, the people who just took the risk.
The old fogies that you don't have to deal with anymore.
The people who did it the first year, and I think that's the reason the first year that we did it, it was just a little, it was more, you know, not many people, not even me really knew how it was going to turn out. So the people who just said, you want me to write a play overnight, or you want me to come in on Saturday and be cast in a play that I've never read before, you want me to direct a play I've never read before, you know, and Tricia, like, Ray, do you want me to design costumes for 7 plays that aren't even written yet and do that in 2.5 hours on a Saturday afternoon? And everyone's just said yes, and we did it. And of course, Live Arts was great. John Gibson was the artistic director at the time, and he just said, Ray, I don't know exactly what you want to do, but if you want to do something, then Live Arts is the place for you to do it. So just do it.
Mic drop for the John Gibson
Boom.
Impersonation.
That isn't bad. I got a little too soft, but John's generally a softer speaker than I am.
So I've done these before, and I've done these in different places as well. This is a thing. This is a thing that theaters do, and I would not be surprised if it were nationwide. I imagine that it is. How did you come to do it? I mean, what was it 8 years ago that made you think, oh, let's do this? Had you heard about it somewhere? Did you reinvent the wheel?
It is a little bit of reinventing the wheel, I guess. So for me, 92 or 93, I was in New York City, and my friend Amanda said, oh, we're going to do this thing at this like theater in the Lower East Side, before the Lower East Side was hip. There's this thing in the Lower East Side. We're going to have all these plays, and they're going to be written overnight, and then we're going to be cast in the day, then we're just going to rehearse them, we're just going to do them. And I thought to myself, that sounds like the stupidest thing I've ever heard. That's not theater. But I had a crush on Amanda, and I said, okay, I'll do it. So that's when I first, that's my first encounter with it. And it was great. And then, like I said, I have friends in Seattle who do it. I have friends in Los Angeles who've been doing it for years. And I think the uniqueness of 24/7 is just that we've done it for 8 years now. And we've been able to refine it in a way that we have some elements that other theater companies do that I know. We have some elements that works primarily in Charlottesville or primarily for us. One of the things that I don't know I just came up with, because I like the idea, and I don't know if anyone else is doing it, but maybe someone else is the cameo role.
Uh-huh.
So we have a couple actors who play minor parts in several plays. And that adds when the whole evening comes together, you have a couple actors who reappear. They're someone's daughter, they have five lines. Then they come back in and they're the devil and they have three lines. And they come back in and they're like the police officer and they have one line or no lines. And it kind of adds this dimension to the whole evening that that kind of brings all the production. Brings all of the plays together as one solid production, and
it's kind of a performative through line,
right? And so it almost makes it seem. Well, I don't know because I haven't just arrived, but my artistic instinct is that it makes it seem for the audience like it's another more impossible feat. Like, how is this whole evening of theater put together? Not just each play, 7 10-minute plays individually, but the whole evening is put together. And to that, I have to say also, since I'm talking and not waiting for the next question, is we've had the benefit of having an amazing crews. I mean, crews like technicians, you know, lighting designer. Now, Heather Hutton, who I probably think is the best lighting designer in Charlottesville, has been our lighting designer every year for the past 7 years. And our costume queens of Linda Zuby and Amy Goffman, because that's a big task. They have like 30 roles. 30 roles are written, and they have, like I said, 2.5 hours to come up with these costumes, and they do a great job. And it really kind of it makes, you know, we have a kind of an aesthetic that is less is more, but the idea that we have the costumes and these lights to really make it like a full theater production, is just awesome. I myself am blown away every year by just how things happen and how last year we had a robot and an escape pod in a play called Space Odyssey that it was hilarious, and of course it was just Scott, you know, pulling someone across the stage on a scooter.
But hey, whatever works.
Right. So that was great.
You're listening to Homegrown, the show devoted to everything arts, here on 94.7 WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Okay, 41 minutes past the hour, and we are here with our guest, Ray Netzel of Hole Theater. So, we've talked a lot about it from the artistic point of view. The audience, whenever I've left 24/7, the people who have been leaving at the same time, it's been fun listening to them. They are so jazzed. Yeah. They are so jazzed. They really feed off the energy of it. I wonder how much is it sort of a NASCAR feel to it? I mean, do you think people go hoping to see the train wrecks, hoping to see things fall apart?
Like the second year that I did it, when the lights just went out, like the whole board just died, and I think there were like 5 actors on stage in the middle of a kidnapping scenario, and the guy holding the gun had to kind of be like, okay, I'll say something funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I think first of all, NASCAR is it would be my least favorite sport if it was actually a sport, but it's not. It's a car show.
Deal.
So yeah, so people go to see the crashes, but
and pretty cars
and pretty men all in leather.
Stop it! You're getting me all excited over here.
Let's talk about NASCAR for the rest of the show. Like, I love NASCAR. I'm a NASCAR enthusiast.
we're afraid of offending our NASCAR base out there.
So the enthusiasm of the audience, I think that what happens, you've both done it before, but there is energy that is infused from person to person throughout the day, and it actually builds, and I think that just spills over into the audience. You know, sometimes I have very little sleep, and then when I host the show, sometimes I feel like I've never been more energetic on stage hosting the show, even after coming through this full day of work and staying up late sometimes with the playwrights and talking to them and getting very little sleep and just having, you know, decision to make. But here, decision to make is also another thing. It's like I have to make the decision. You have to make the decision. The director has to make the decision. The actor has to memorize lines. There's not like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow or I'll do that this afternoon. You have to do it. So there's this like thing. It's like it's all immediate. Go ahead.
And I think that is the really awesome part about it, because you don't have time to be wishy-washy about anything.
right.
You have to make the decision because in 20 minutes you're moving on to the next thing, and you got to have that done.
Right.
Period. Let's go.
Right.
Done. Next.
Right.
And that's great. I mean, it's hard. Don't get me wrong. It is really hard to memorize like a 15-page script in like 7 hours, and then remember it. But you know,
That's what memorizing means. Remember it.
Ha ha! Funny. You're very funny this morning. But it focuses your mind, especially for an actor. Mm-hmm. It really focuses your mind in a way that you rarely do when you're in a show, because normally you do have all this time, And the other great thing about it, I think, is the fact that you get to work with people that you probably would never be cast with in any other situation. Like the first year I did it, I was in a play about breastfeeding in an office environment of all things, but it was hysterical. And I met this wonderful actress who is now one of my favorite people on the planet, Sarah Eshelman, you know, but I would have never met her and been able to like connect with her that way if I hadn't done 24/7.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that what happens is, I hope that, that for my part, that I hope instill this too. And I know that our crew does, and I know that, Kristen Wenger, our stage manager does, is really instill, a sense of support and a sense of trust. And so I've seen casts come together and you're like,
not about ruling from a Machiavellian point of view.
Machiavellian. The word of the day is Machiavellian. However, Kristen makes the trains run on time. Is that Machiavellian?
That's not Machiavellian.
No, it's not Machiavellian. No, that's...
It might be the result of, you know, some Machiavellian workings.
I'm slowly, Clinton, taking over this show. Machiavellianly.
Do you think that we didn't know that would happen when we asked you to come on as a guest?
We have met you before.
I was talking about trust and support.
Yes, Ray, go on about trust and support.
Continue.
So, you know, having such a great stage management team and a crew, and also directors, right? So the idea is that there will be a time in the day with every director where there'll be something that we're trying to work out, right? And I'll have some ideas, and they'll have some ideas, and the actors will have some ideas, and I do say with confidence, I say, I trust that you will figure this out. You got the smarts, you got the talent, you got the time, even though the time is limited, but you'll figure this out. And that's that type of like, of course I say you have to trust your fellow actor, you have to trust your director, you have to trust the lighting designer. And sometimes just saying, okay, I'm going to get great lights from Heather. I'm going to get great costumes. For saying that's what I'm going to get. So I can focus on helping the actors get off book. Or if I'm an actor, I can focus on what actually is going on here. Or like now I have to learn how to juggle in a day. Or, you know, like thanks to Jigsaw, who's coming to do his puppet show. He wrote a play one time and he wrote another like musical where he's like, hey, we're going to cast people and you're going to have to learn how to play guitar and sing a song in a day. And luckily he got someone who could already play guitar. So she just had to learn the song. So that's the type of thing that happens. That is just that level of trust. Like you're not going to be let go. You're going to be given the support and the strength and to be able to shine in your own way. And that's going to like highlight the people you're on stage with, the person who directed the show, the person who wrote the play. It really helps. I come from an improv background, but that's improv, you know. That's improv is really about making the other person look good.
That fascinates me, though. The thing that fascinates me about listening to this right now is that I mean, going into it or just hearing it from the outside, you may think, oh, it's so much about spontaneity. Oh, it's so much about working from the seat of your pants. Oh, my gosh, they wrote these in over the night and they're what the heck. But it's a combination, really. It's a combination of really serious pre-planning. It's a combination of stuff that you depend on and people and a crew that you depend on over and over again. It's a combination of these set and fixed elements mixed with these spontaneous elements. And I would suggest, and what it sounds like you're saying is that the spontaneity really only exists, really only is allowed to reach the heights that it does because it's got the support of some bedrock behind it.
Oh, that's absolutely right.
And that is theater right there.
Yeah, I mean, it is because the whole rehearsal process, as you know, should get everyone to a place where it's a live event, where it's just happening. So then, things can happen, like lights can stop working or the fire curtain goes down or something like that, but it's really a live event, and that's how to get there in just a day. I think that's the wonderment of 24/7, but it doesn't exist without a lot of pre-planning. That's how I kind of spend my October, November, and December. I really like spreadsheets, and like I said, I couldn't really do it without Kristen.
She is great. She is amazing.
Much more organized than I am, and and of course it's a benefit for live arts. So live arts helps out amazingly. Tracy over at Live Arts has been an amazing help, and of course. You know, I said John Gibson gave it the green light 8 years ago, but then Matt came and Matt said that sounds awesome, keep doing it. And then Julie came and Julie said that sounds awesome, keep doing it. So, so that's all been great too. But yeah, it has this whole preparation, almost like a mathematical, it's almost like a formula behind it, which is one of the reasons that led me to call it 24/7. Not just that it's seven new plays in 24 hours and it's got this 24/7, it's up all night type feeling, but it actually is, as we work it out, it's seven playwrights, seven directors, 24 actors, you know, it's 24 hours, seven new plays. So it just, and that, when we varied from that, the results have been not as good as saying, like we're gonna stick with this formula. We're gonna stick with whatever setup gets. Now, that being said, one of the things I think is key for 24/7 is that over 50% each year charge to ourselves is that over 50% of the people doing it are new and have never done it before. And this year in particular. Since it's all in a spreadsheet, and I like spreadsheets, and now Google Spreadsheets provides charts, 78.3% of the actors have never been in 24/7 before.
Awesome.
And it's just kind of a great thing that is that so many people are willing to take this chance. Now, people have seen it, people have heard about it, so it's a lot of fun in the theater. And you're right, the energy of the audience leaving is sometimes people say, hey, this is the best thing I ever saw. I think part of that comes from they're like, what could it possibly be? You know, how could it possibly be? This is like a college, like, writing class, you know, overnight assignment. Like, how could this possibly be good if you only did it, if you just did it overnight? How could it be good? And they're like, oh, wow, that's really good. You know, and of course, not every play, just by the nature of the way things, can be the world's best play, right? If the world's best play was written for 24/7, it could only happen once because it would be the world's best play, and then the other ones would be the world's second best play and third best play. But so the miracle is just watching these plays come to life, watching the artistic energy being put into the play, and so it's the playwright and it's the director, it's the actors, it's the crew, it's everyone all coming together, trusting each other. Getting a little nutty, not getting much sleep, drinking a lot of coffee, and saying, let's do some live theater.
Ray Nedzel, thank you so much for coming on the show. Remind our audience when and where again.
24/7 is at Live Arts in the John Gibson Theater, January 23rd. The first show, which is almost sold out now, get your tickets now at 7 p.m. Go to livearts.org. That's livearts.org. Get your tickets. January 23rd, there's a second show at 9:30 because the first show always sells out. And some people say the 9:30 show is the best one. That's the one to see. Things get even crazier.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Ray. All right. right. It is 53 minutes past the hour, coming to the end of yet another episode of Homegrown. And I think it is time for the piece, the moment that probably everyone waits for, Leslie's weekly rant.
I don't know if everyone waits for it, but I like to believe that. Thank you, Clinton. All right, so 2016 has not been the best year for artists so far. First, we lose Natalie Cole, then Bowie, and most recently, we lost Alan Rickman. Natalie was so unexpected. Bowie as well, because no one even knew he was sick. And by the time we got the news about Alan, I think we were all in so much shock from the other two, we could barely breathe. Or at least, I couldn't. And then the very next day, it seems, the Oscar nominations come out. Yes. Beasts of No Nation, Chirac, and Concussion were all passed over for Best Picture, and for any nods to the amazing acting done in those films. Even Straight Outta Compton got snubbed, as far as I'm concerned, with an original screenplay nod. Really? Original screenplay? It wasn't fiction, people. It was the story of this group of revolutionary artists. It was what happened. And if you don't think they were revolutionary, just think about how many people you know who listen to rap music today because of N.W.A. Yeah, N.W.A. started the mainstream onslaught of hip-hop. History has yet to tell us if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but they did it, and they deserved more than what they got. I think the saddest thing this week was listening to Ice Cube relate that he wasn't surprised. He knew the movie wouldn't get recognition from the establishment, even though it grossed over $200 million worldwide. But, you know, he got that check, so he's okay with that. But should he be? I mean, I don't think so. With all the talk, especially this year in Hollywood, about diversity and its importance, they don't seem to be paying attention to their own hype, which I'll grant you is not exactly new for that place. I mean, after listening to Alan Rickman talk about what he thinks actors, musicians, painters, writers need to do to be good, it boggles my mind why the recognition of people doing just that is so hard. Alan, during an interview with Charlie Rose, said artists need to read, go see other art, form opinions about life, know what's going on in the world. He said they need to because those are the emotions and the perceptions you'll bring to your work, and you need something rich and deep to draw from. Will Smith, Ice Cube, and Idris Elba brought that this year. And they're not the only ones. So I won't be watching the Oscars this year. I may not ever watch them again. I can't participate in a celebration of art that so blatantly disregards a huge part of the community. Seriously, that night, I'm calling in black. And that's the weekly rant.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
What? What?
We have been devastated by the loss of some great artists. The world really is in mourning, and you're focusing on the Oscars.
Well, I mean, think about it. These wonderful people, Natalie, David, Alan, they left us, and these were people who really cared about their art, who were celebrated and recognized because they did such great work. And yet we have work that is also great, that was done this year. And the one majorly recognized quote-unquote celebration of it just left out an entire section of what happened.
That's a rather thin connection. That's a rather thin connection between those. I think this is yet another opportunity for you to engage in your rebel agenda and throw it in our faces once more. I mean, good gosh, Alan Rickman just died. The guy who played Snape just died, all right? Millions of people who saw him as kids and focused on him and fixated on him as that character are now bereft of a beloved character. And you're talking about Ice Cube? Really?
Well, and I
really?
Think, and I think he would be just as upset at what happened as I am.
Not as upset as I am listening to this kind of stuff. I mean, I can't believe that you're going to... And I don't even talk...
Don't even talk to you? Just, like, but I am talking to you.
I've been mourning David Bowie all week, and you're going to do this? I can't take it! I can't stand it!
He can't stand it.
God freaking...
All right, well, Clinton's gotten mad at me again, and he's, he slammed the door. Well, I guess that's the end of the show, guys, and stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call with our wonderful new mayor. Oh, my God, how'd they get that? How'd they make that happen? I don't know. But thanks so much for tuning in. We want to thank our guests, Elizabeth Breeden and Ray Netzel, and I hope you guys go see 24/7, and I hope you continue to drive by Art and Place and let everybody know it's great. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.